You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
You can say for free. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the R-H-A-P-B-M-B for episode 9 of Survivor Edge of Extinction. We are all going to firmly stay in our seats and talk into our microphones. Nobody's going to get up and whisper in the corner. We are ready to break down everything from this bananas tribal council and this overall episode of Survivor 38. Welcome in our panel. First, our tried and true co-owner of the B&B here week in and week out, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Unlike the Edge of Extinction, this is not hard and there is a lot to do because we have so much to talk about on this episode of the B&B. I cannot wait.
Yes, not a lot of free time to sit around and think about stingrays and other wet cylindrical looking things that are coming out of the ocean. There's a lot to discuss in this episode. And of course, we had to bring in one of the best Survivor analysts out there. There's a lot of talk about pilots and passengers, even more so this episode. So it makes sense that we talk to somebody who a lot of us would have to go fly on an airplane to actually see, the big head of all things international Survivor officially, including Australia, South Africa, New Zealand. Hopefully it'll make its way back from the edge of extinction. But we're so happy to welcome back Shannon Gates to the B&B. Shannon, how are you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, I like the idea of New Zealand being an edge of extinction. That's a really good comparison because I feel like the people who are there feel like they're not out, but they probably are. So I think that's what we're all kind of holding on to with Survivor New Zealand.
But like maybe we'll get one of them back, you know, like that's what we're holding on hope for. Right. Like we might not get all of them, but maybe just one is all we need.
Just one season again ever would be great. But yeah, it's purgatory. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Survivor New Zealand staying in it, it's teaching a nice lesson to its Survivor children of how you don't give up as a franchise, even when the going gets tough.
Classic Survivor New Zealand. But thank you so much for having me here. It's been a really interesting couple of weeks of Edge of Extinction, so I'm excited to talk about it. A lot of really interesting strategy, and I was kind of going through my notes and trying to pass out the strategy, and then I realized this podcast is just going to be like wall-to-wall poop jokes, right? So let's just do that instead.
Nailed it. That's actually, one of our reviews on Yelp. Just wall-to-wall poop jokes, 5 stars.
As opposed to that wall-to-wall poop that we had a while ago, but we cleared that out in the off-season.
Well, that's good. That's good. It's good to be here and know that that's been fixed. But I think that, look, the poop line for Rick is iconic. I think it may come to define him. And I do think that if there's ever an autobiography written about him or a biography written about him, I'm the poop, the Rick Devon story would be a really good title. So that is the only poop joke I have prepared for this podcast.
That's actually in production. I think Matthew Perry is poised to play Rick Devons in the upcoming biopic. But yeah. That's the title.
But the only place you can get to in the box office charts is number 2. So I don't know if exactly studios want to pick it up.
That's classic, right on point, Mike. But yeah, Matthew Perry would be like a way better Rick Devons than Ron Clark, now that you're saying it, right? Like, that is not who I would cast now that I know Ron Clark to play him.
I know. Yeah, talk about some interesting casting choices. But
I feel like Ron Clark is more like Mr. Heckles and Chandler, you know, like just an odd casting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, maybe Ron Clark wasn't dancing so much back during the days of the biopic. Maybe that's something he's taken up in his older age, you know, post-movie, post-founding of the Ron Clark Academy. I don't know. I'll admit I haven't seen the film, so I don't know exactly what that snapshot of Ron Clark's life was. But yeah, looking back on it, looking at the elder statesman version of Ron Clark, maybe Matthew Perry isn't a great fit. I'm trying to think about who would make a good Ron Clark if we made the movie now. I'm drawing a bit of a blank. Maybe someone like Jeff Goldblum could fill that sort of like enigmatic persona of Ron Clark.
If you could get the accent down, because I think that's really important for charactering Ron Clark as a person. Like it really, when I see him, I also hear his voice at the same time.
Yeah, well, now that we're like talking about Ron Clark, I wanted to say that my favorite part of this whole episode and my major takeaway was that it introduced me to my new favorite character on the season. And that is sad Ron Clark. Like, I think that Julie was getting a lot of the emphasis because she was like crying and yelling and she sat on David Wright's lap. But sad Ron Clark, why the entire episode did he sound like he was being mugged? Like, did you get that?
Okay. I didn't get mugged. I got like sad puppy dog, like tail tucked between his legs. I just don't want to go home. I just want to be a passenger.
But like, no, here's some actual lines that I've taken from what he said. He said, I'll vote for whoever you say. I'll do whatever you want. Just don't send me home. I will do whatever needs to happen. Don't make me do this. Like, he sounded like he was getting mugged the entire episode.
It sounds like he was being held hostage by Kama.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do what you say. Just like, you don't need to write to Matthew Perry to ask for money to get me sent to the edge of extinction, okay? I'll do what you want.
Just go to tribal council, read this statement. Everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, Ron Clark is obviously not someone who does things in like half measures, because last episode after one tribal council, he was like beyond on top of the world puppet master. Now he's like completely down in the dumps and there is like no middle earth between those two things. I can't even imagine what just regular Ron Clark must be like.
Is that where Survivor New Zealand lives? Lives in Middle Earth? Is that where its edge of extinction is?
Yes, between Ron Clark, puppet master, and Ron Clark being held hostage / being mugged for sure.
Wow, we got real idealistic here in the first 5 minutes of the B&B. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. So, Shannon, you talked about the past couple of weeks being super interesting. I know you have been very vocal throughout the season, as you usually are. I got to say, one of my favorite activities to do is to go through my social media feed Thursday morning and just get all of your thoughts, a nice wall of Shannon Gates text, awesome analysis behind each episode. So what are your thoughts of Edge of Extinction thus far, especially taking into account this pretty chaotic post-merge?
Look, it's gotten pretty good, I think. You know, there are still some issues with the season that won't go away. The lopsided editing that is probably, you know, because it's too overstuffed. Edge of Extinction, I have my issues with it. But in the last couple of weeks, it's gotten really fun. The move last week, I think, has been kind of the anchor of that. And I think, like both of you, I didn't think it was a good move, mostly because I could kind of see this exact path happening. You know, I think I compared it to Jessica Lewis and the Gen X women taking out Paul, but then the people they betrayed and the people that they, you know, owed nothing to them, which ironically was led by David Wright, all kind of just got together to go against them then. So they made themselves a huge target. They lost a lot of options for who they could work with. They pissed some people off, and then, you know, it came back to bite them there. And it seemed pretty like obvious that that could happen. And then the follow through naturally did in this episode. So I didn't think it was a good move. And something that I think isn't really being talked about is that last week they made this move, and they had the option to control the number, control the vote, and kind of decide the pace of the game. And it's something Christian Hubicki actually spoke a bit about, that he was trying to make the game faster in the hope that he would just be like a better player who could handle it. But who can handle faster play? You know, it's not Kama, who had been to one tribal council, a lot of them to that point. It's Lesu, who had two veteran players in their mix and who had had the most disastrous pre-merge. One of them was literally voted out and brought back. And when you have that faster play, you're behooved when you have, you know, the skills like, you know, better, you know, being more calm at tribal council. Like, how much did that come into play? Or having, you know, more logic over emotionality, or having better reads, which we saw with David and Kelly through like all the years that they've played Survivor. So things like that, that Lesu really earned through the pre-merge. The thing that Kama earned was to have numbers, to take it slow, you know, for the beginning of the merge. Obviously they sacrificed that, and now they're in a very bad position against players who are a lot more experienced than them.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I kind of see these, the merge, like pre-merge and then merge, as almost like two different stories, but they're definitely two different books, but they're in the same series, if that makes sense. Like, it almost feels like pre-merge is all about this Lesu, you know, like all of their tumultuous events that happened with them. And then this is all about this comma implosion. And it definitely feels a little disconnected, but they're definitely part of the same series in the same way. And so we kind of get to see, you know, what happened with this more seasoned group of people with David and with Kelly. And now we're sort of moving into this comma era of these new players really sort of self-destructing in such a crazy way. And it's really fun and entertaining to watch it play out.
I see similarly, but I see it similarly, but I see, you know, I see it more from Lesu's point of view in both regards, where yes, the pre-merge was all about Lesu, and this post-merge I still see as like, the pre-merge was Lesu fighting with Lesu, and the post-merge is still that, but also Lesu like taking down everyone around them. Even like the massive move by, you know, Gavin and Julia was told to us every single time by War Dog made them do this. It wasn't like, good job on you. That's how I knew as well that it wasn't exactly going to go well for them. So I see it still as like, the prequel was Lesu kind of fighting against each other, and now we're in another part of it where it's Lesu taking on everyone around them. But definitely the entire season to me has been told through their lens.
Yeah, I mean, I would compare it to like the post-merge right now are Star Wars episodes 4, 5, and 6, where it's like, okay, we know there's the Rebel Alliance and there's the Empire. And then episodes 1, 2, and 3 were the pre-merge, where it's like, okay, how did they become the Empire? How did they become the dark side? And so, though I guess at this point, they're the Rebel Alliance now because they're sort of the underdogs. I'm confusing my metaphors here, but it's an interesting point that it does. And I think that's also credit to the fact that, as I mentioned before on this podcast, this is a weird season, and especially the storytelling is extremely weird, where the Lesus are, it feels like some people might ebb and flow in terms of their involvement in the story, especially this episode was really Julia's episode in more ways than one, when suffice it to say, she really has been pretty conspicuous in the previous 8 episodes or so, or at least the first 7. And so, but the one constant to Shannon's point seems to be these Lesus. And it really feels like amidst the, you know, the players that come and leave this stage of Survivor 38, it really does feel like at the end of the day, this is going to be Lesu's story. I have to feel like at least 2 of them are going to make the final 3. That's my prediction right now.
But do you think that it's going to be a Lesu winner? Because I guess like I kind of feel like we could see that group going deep, but I almost feel like whoever the comma member that's remaining, I think that they might be the one that ends up winning.
I don't know. To me, it's Lesu's story. Like, I mean, obviously there are some comma members that stand out. Victoria would probably be number one in that. But of course, Victoria would probably be in one of my first few, you know, winner rankings. But I mean, you know, in terms of who I think could win. But other than Victoria and then to an extent, Julie, I would have all of Lesu there before anyone else from comma. You know, in terms of who can win from comma, I think like Joe and Aubrey probably have 2 of the best shots coming back from Edge of Extinction. You know, like Gavin, is that happening? Julia, obviously that wasn't happening. There's been just not enough character development to make it their story.
We're going to talk a lot about the tribal council, and understandably so. This took up half the episode. I got to say also off the top, I love this episode. It took me a little while, but I got to say, 9 episodes into a 14 episode season, I'm loving Survivor Edge of Extinction. Again, I'll admit it is off the beaten path of the Survivor that we know and love, especially coming off of David versus Goliath, which I think was more conventional from a game structure perspective. But listen, you know how much I love chaos, and this was just pure unbridled chaos. Do I want this to be the norm from now on, as Rob is sort of alluding to, could be a slippery slope? Hopefully not, but I mean, I was just staring there, mouth agape, for the last 20 minutes of the episode, just trying to figure out what in God's name is going on. And even aside from the Tribal Council, you know, I tweeted about this, even the scene before Tribal Council where this a group of 5 of them just sitting, staring, stewing in their silence and trying to figure out, OK, in this extraordinary amount of downtime, what should I be doing? What are people giving off to me? How do I perceive that? Am I being overly paranoid? Should I make moves based on it? That is probably the biggest microcosm of Survivor I've seen in this modern day age. It actually took a moment to breathe and to enjoy the silence in that soundtrack. But ironically enough, that silence had the most to say about the game. And Kelly and David were the two that were really able to comment on it and pick up on it. So I thought this episode was extremely well done. It was super unconventional, but so is this season. And like this season, it's still highly entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, it was almost like the calm before the calm.
No. I'm encouraging it. I'm pumping it up. No, you don't need to jump ship.
Okay. I was actually thinking about it from Principal Ron Clark's perspective, which, by the way, when he pulled Gavin into his office, so you felt okay about your decision. Oh my God. So passive aggressive.
I'm going to call your loved one. Yeah. And he's going to come pick you up.
Exactly. So I have this mental image of almost like, you know, the kids not doing their homework before, and then all of a sudden getting to tribal, and then you have to scramble to like get everything together. It was so fun to see the juxtaposition between the two scenes, where you do have this like awkward, you know, stale air, and then you get into just the complete chaos that is a 30-minute tribal council, at least in terms of airtime. It was so much fun, and I did not miss the reward challenge. Like, reward challenge, it was fine.
Yeah, I think when I saw it was immunity instead of reward, I was like, oh, thank God. You know, sometimes you can't be bothered going through these reward challenges with teams. You can't even remember who's on what team for a reward that is relevant to us. You know, it's not like it's like their family members or anything. I was like, yeah, just go straight to immunity, please. But I think that in this episode, they did have a plan, Karma. You know, it seems like based on all the Twitter press conferences that are happening, the plan was Karma Strong to go for Kelly, and they had kind of told the Lesu 3 that they were going for David. But I think that this Karma 3, or 4 with Aurora, who made the move last week, where they went really wrong in this episode was that when you're so chaotic last week and you blindside everyone, you need to be so strong and so clear. And unfortunately, they had lost the ability to split votes in terms of numbers because they'd made that move last week. But you have to kind of come in, make your decision, and go into tribal council being like, we are Karma Strong. Not like decoy plans, not like we're kind of working with everyone. They needed to be so much clearer than they were, because obviously there was such a lack of trust there that that's what ended up kind of blowing up, because Julie and Ron just did not trust them. So I think that's really where they went wrong. And I think that's really indicative, something that Steven said on Know It Alls, was when it all kind of hit the fan, it was because Julia said, there are many plans. There should not have been many plans. You should have gone and saying, we have a plan against you. You know, it's back to that very basic us against you, and that's slowing the game back down to a place where you can control it. But she was saying many plans, and everyone else was like, well, I guess we'll just add another one to it, but you won't be a part of it. And it seems pretty obvious that would happen.
And I think that's a disadvantage to bring up another Steven point about making this move at the final 12, is because I think, you know, if you make this move at like the final 7, you say, okay, we got a locked in alliance. We only have to go through a few more votes. Mm-hmm. And on paper at first, they were like, great, we have this new alliance of 7. We're going to steamroll the game. But because there's so much open territory and there are so many people, you have Julia saying, well, I kind of still want to get rid of Kelly Wentworth. And so even within that internal Karma group, there seems to be a lot of tug of war and fighting. And as Gavin probably misappropriates it, a dictatorship going on. And so I think that was another big reason why this group completely fell apart. I think we might be able to declare them DOA, considering that Gavin and Victoria turned on Julia. Aurora decided not to, I guess, to show her loyalty. But I mean, it seems like they should have, to your point, Shannon, come in with a group mindset. But even within themselves, they were still playing such individualistic games. That comes from the fact that they're at the final 11. You know, when you have so many people around you to choose from, I feel like your imagination goes wild with what you can do. The good thing about making these moves down the line is that your options are much more limited after the fact. You're like, well, I can't really jump over to the other side now. I might as well stick with the group I voted with. Here, the world was their oyster, and they promptly, you know, just gave their pearls away to the other alliance.
Yeah, the pacing of Survivor is always so, so weird to me to think about. You know, I always think about, like, Rob making moves in the Amazon at, like, 8 and 7, and how that would be, like, you know, the second last episode in a double boot before a 6-person finale at this point. Obviously, it's different with final 2s and 3s and stuff, and you have to make moves earlier. It's also different for international Survivor when you start with 24 people or however many people, and it's so many weeks. But just, like, the pacing of these seasons can be so odd to me. Like, really, we are, they made the move at final 12. And like, think about how many people that is. I know now it seems like, okay, well, we're 9 weeks into the show, like, make your move, but so many people still to go. And obviously there's still 16 people in the game and we're, you know, in April. So it's just crazy to me the way the pace of the game has shifted.
So I think that that's a really interesting point, because you talk about the pacing, and I like totally understand it's really kind of hard to get a little bit of a gauge on that. But to me, what this felt like was, okay, we're going to make like a crazy move at the merge, and then we're going to make an even crazier move by taking out Eric in this the next tribal council. And then it felt like they really didn't have a concrete plan of what they were going to do next. Like, I know that this is a week to week game, but, or, you know, 3 day or day to day game, but I feel like then you kind of want to think about, all right, so if we're going to do this, what are we going to do next that then helps us continue to get further in the game? Because I feel like the disagreement between Gavin and sort of the rest of the group about, okay, do we stick with this Lesu 3 or do we go back to the commas and then try to be comma strong? Like, there was no consensus on what they were going to do next. Like, it was a very much in the moment move. And I just feel like everything was so chaotic. They weren't really thinking ahead or had a game plan. And I know they're starved and it's hard. And like, I get that. And it's crazy, but it just felt so chaotic, not just the tribal council, but just the decisions that were being made moving forward. So I don't know. It was all insane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I spent my entire week arguing that this was a really bad move. And what happened while I was kind of trying to work out, like, you know, why would they do this? And obviously there were some pros and cons. It's all risk versus reward. But as I was arguing that this was nothing like the Laurel situation, on Twitter, Wardog replied to my tweet, because he replies to all my tweets. I literally feel like I speak to Wardog more than most people in my life. And he was saying,
I feel like if someone on Twitter uses the words war and dog in a sentence, even if it's one's at the beginning and one's at the end, he's going to respond. Like, he's got all the possible permutations of Google alerts.
No, I wasn't even talking about him. Like, it was completely, it didn't have anything to do with Wardog. But then he replied and he was like, well, they showed the Ghost Island finale at, you know, Ponderosa before the game, and I guess kind of shamed Laurel even more for not making a move. So I was like, oh, okay, so that's why people are making these moves, because they're so scared to just kind of be dormant, even though those situations are really nothing alike. And then when Gavin said in this episode, he was like, yeah, you know, Eric was my closest ally, but now I have points on my resume. I was like, no. You know what's better than points on your resume? Having your closest ally at the final freaking 11. Like that, and I think I now understand why they made a move against their best interest. And Wardog was even like, yeah, I was using the people who didn't slip in Ghost Island, you know, to make them scared. And I was like, okay, well, you literally just confirmed why they did this and it wasn't good.
Wow. I love the meta gamesmanship now. And I guess, you know, will this become a thing with Survivor 40, whoever goes out there, of like, hey, listen, look what Kama's doing. Don't be like Kama. So it's almost like we keep reverting back and forth between these two extremes of extremely chaotic gameplay and extremely conservative gameplay. We're playing essentially like Ron Clark. There is no middle ground.
Yeah, every second season is going to be super extreme, but the opposite. It will frustrate us every time. It's like people say Survivor fans are never happy. And I mean, like on a personal level, I don't know. Just do the right thing. Just do a good thing. I'll be very happy. You know, just don't make a bad move in either direction. And I think that's what I want.
Well, I think it's hard also when, you know, you have someone who is a super fan, and I'm sure if I were to ever play Survivor, I would suffer from these same issues of almost relying too much on what you think you should be learning from the past and what you think you should be taking away from moves that other people have made. Where I feel like the people who are really, truly great Survivor players are able to just read the situation that they're in correctly and then deduce the appropriate move based on the situation that they specifically are in.
Yes.
Not try to equate it to someone else. And so this is, I think, kind of an example of that, or, you know, the image of how am I going to look to the public, blah, 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 whatever the case may be.
So let's get into one of these fans whose maybe judgment might have been clouded by what they just saw on Ghost Island. Let's talk about what happened to the curious case of Julia Carter. So, Liana, what did you have to say about how Julia would do preseason?
I don't want to go first. Mike, can you go first?
I'll go first. Sure. I'll step forward here. I'll get up and present my case. So I had Julia making the jury.
Oh.
I said that she'd become close with Aubrey quickly. Their brainy bond becomes one of the tightest in the game. I said she'll commonly become a decoy vote due to her nice nature. And I said that she basically gets voted out in an effort to get to Aubrey. So I guess one of those, like, not cutting off the head of the snake, but cutting off the tongue of this very valuable body parts of the snake that's on his head.
Okay, so Julia was my winner pick.
Whoa!
I know. All right, so here's what I said. Julia was a middle-of-the-road winner. She didn't make any big hashtag game-changer moves, Whoa. But she also didn't piss anyone off. I know. She was able... So it gets worse. She was able to read the room, slip under the radar, and follow the numbers. Her excellent communication skills allowed her to bond with most people in the game and move from group to group. She easily won the game, especially considering she was sitting next to Wargoat, which the Murdoch gets the name Wargoat throughout the predictions. Anyway, so we can just move on. It's fine.
Liana, you just described the alternate reality, the sliding doors reality. If Julia doesn't make the move last week. Becomes a middle of the road right? winner. And she didn't make any big moves, but she did win. So that's good as well. Mike, you didn't get a lot right either, except for the fact that she made the jury, but so did literally everyone in the season pretty much. So, but I mean, Liana, yours was really an actively bad prediction considering she didn't win. She did piss people off. She did make a big move kind of for the sake of it. So I think I have to give this one to Mike.
That's fair.
I love that might be, and I say this with all loving Liana because it's a fantastically ironic, but that might be one of the worst predictions we've had in quite some time, considering that literally the exact opposite of every sentence you read was Julia Carter in the past hour of television.
In the past hour, but before that, she was really on Liana's path. Like, she actually was.
Yeah, exactly. And damn it, Julia, why'd you have to watch the Ghost Island finale? Like, come on. Yeah, this was a brutal one to read. You know, sometimes you like go back, you look at your predictions, you're like, oh, that's a, you know, I did a great job, or ooh, not so close. This one was like, oh, facepalm. Like, I've never been more tempted to cheat at any of these predictions than this one. It was just so bad.
Well, listen, now we know you're not cheating.
The choir, I'm the one that predicted the Chris Noble Libby showmance back in the day.
I can see it.
Hot.
Oh, no, actually, no, it was Chris Noble Chelsea. That's what it was.
Oh, that's right.
So it's much worse, much worse.
You think like Laurel is like so over us talking about how she didn't flip.
I know,
flip.
Poor Laurel.
She's getting shamed at pregame Ponderosa. Like, no one deserves this, like, honestly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, she gets a lot of criticism, and I know that there's been a lot of, oh, well, Laurel didn't make a move, you're going to be critical. These people made a move, you're going to be critical. I guess that goes to Shannon, what you were saying about, oh, Survivor fans can never be happy. But you know what? Complaining is way more fun. What am I supposed to be here impressed by everybody? Oh, they're having such a grand time.
I think Survivor fans can be happy. Like, I just think that, like, because there's been a lot of talk this whole week about, well, too early is better than too late. And like, I guess that's true, but like, bad timing is bad timing anyway to me. Like, just make a move right at, if not a good time, then at least an okay time, but not like an actively bad time before or after. So, I personally think I can be happy. I think I'm really working towards that. It's more just, well, this got really real and like unintentionally. No, I think that Survivor fans, it's not like we hate every move. I think that's like a really false narrative. We just hate really bad moves, and people have made them within the last two seasons, in the last two episodes.
I'd rather have dry chicken than salmonella.
Well, okay.
I'm a vegetarian, Mike, so can you chicken. Please have a more pertinent reference?
I'd rather have overcooked asparagus than too crunchy.
I don't eat vegetables. Can we go to a more dessert?
What do you eat then?
A lot of chocolate and mayonnaise.
Ew, together?
Not together. I just eat a lot of mayonnaise in general. Why are we talking about what I eat?
Okay. That's like saying your favorite food is butter. Like,
my favorite
you have
food
to
is
eat
mayonnaise.
It with something.
Well, I mean, I guess I do have some stuff with it, but it's mostly mayonnaise. I'm grossing out a lot of people right now, and I would like to edit out the part where I talked about how I love mayonnaise so much.
No, it's a Scott St. Pierre. Edit out the mayonnaise talk.
Well, Shannon, let's spread all that talk away and move on. What did you bring to the table to discuss as a formal discussion question, as is wont to do on the B&B?
All right. I think that we should finally talk about karma. No, I'm joking. This is the Lesu season. Let's talk about where Lesu ranks in dysfunctional tribes, because I think we've got it to the point where they're kind of in the pantheon. You put Luzon, you put the second Luzon, you put, you know, from Survivor South Africa, Kasaya's in there. There's a lot of dysfunctional tribes. Where for you is Lesu ranking in that kind of massive group of crazy tribes that we talk about?
Okay, so I mean, the thing about Kasaya, just because I'd always like, I love Panama, one of my favorite seasons, they at least won challenges. Like, Lesu was so bad. Not only were they dysfunctional internally, but then they also could not win challenges. Mm. Although I guess there were different factions within that. Like, you could say that the War Dog Lauren Kelly group, I mean, are super tight. So, you know, that's like a little bit less dysfunction. So I don't know if we can come up with like a mathematical equation to represent like challenge wins, you know, personal dysfunction, threatening people in their shitty apartments. Like, I don't know what weights more heavily than others. But I don't know. They are pretty chaotic.
Well, the thing was, it really did feel like this episode was basically water under the bridge. You know, War Dog is complimenting Rick Devins at the end of Tribal Council. You know, David and Kelly do that really fun conversation of like, mm-hmm. hey, it's me, by the way, you're being targeted. Oh, makes sense, yada yada yada. Whereas I feel like Kasaya, they kept personally rabbling with each other throughout the entirety of the post-merge. So I guess going back to your equation, Liana, do we wait personal dysfunction more, or do we weight more strategic dysfunction? Because I feel like you could also throw something like the Villains Tribe in there, who was super dysfunctional pre-merge, but post-merge was pretty much in lockstep, except for that one time that Russell decided to get rid of Danielle and send her crying to the jury.
Mm. Well, I do think that, like, so they've got the Matt Singh thing where they lost a bunch. I also think it's funny that the swap kind of kept them together so that they couldn't get away from each other. And then, yes, they're still fighting with each other, but also taking down this majority, like, foa-foa style. But, like, I don't even think that they want to be working together most of the time, but the Survivor Guards just kind of forced them together. Plus, I think a point in their favor for dysfunction is that they can't even decide between themselves how to, you know, pronounce Lesu. So that's a pretty big thing to disagree on. And yeah, I mean, what I really like about Lesu as a dysfunctional tribe is they voted out one of their own members who was still there. So that's a pretty big one. And they've been together, this five of them that were Lesu, from the beginning, and they're all still there. So it's not like Manu, who had like Wendy and everything. That was dysfunctional in its own way. But like this Lesu five, besides voting Rick out for a week, they've always just been together. They haven't been swapped away from each other, and they've been kind of fighting the whole time. But then they also work together in ways like this that are pretty massive and very good moves. And the way that even like War Dog said at the end when Julia got voted out, he was like, Rick Devins, you're like, damn, this lesser group is becoming like actually iconic, that they just survive almost in spite of themselves and in spite of their situation. Like, I'm starting to really love it.
I love that they went to the Survivor courthouse and officially changed their name from Manu to Lesu.
Yeah.
I don't believe the name Manu has been said on this show in the past like 3 weeks or so. All it is now when they're just regarding the group is Lesu. And sometimes Lesu is just referring to that trio of War Dog, Kelly, and Lauren. Sometimes it's referring to all of them, but it's, you know, a once in a lifetime swap where essentially all of Manu became an entirely different tribe. I just love that they've erased that name completely from this season.
I feel like Manu died with Wendy. Like, she was the Manu girl. She stayed on Manu the whole time, and she is one of the only two people in the season to not be there anymore. So, like, Manu is with her.
Right, because it's like, what, Wendy, Keith, Reem, Chris were the other Manu people, right? And I mean, they're not in the game anymore, so it kind of makes sense to just call them all Lesu. So I guess I was just thinking, like, okay, what if you have a tribe that is, you know, like, lose, I guess going back to like challenge strength, you know, so for example, like Oolong or Matt Singh, you know, I don't know how that plays in there, but also, yeah, Luzon was, or both of them were really bad.
I think Luzon 2.0 in the South African version, not to spoil too much, but like they were fighting the whole time, which was an amazing dynamic. And obviously there was some bits of connection there with Tom and Palesa as well. But like Lesu for me, just because they work together in really, really big ways, the way they came together to even win in that double tribal council, like there's more connectivity there than there really should be for a group of people who have a lot of issues, even like in the groups that are working together really well. You know, David and Devins have had massive issues. War Dog, Kelly and Lauren, I mean, I don't even know how they're still aligned to him. I really feel like it's like Kelly and Lauren are like best friends, and War Dog's like, the three of us, you know? I'm not so I mean, obviously they are the Lesu three, but I feel like he's like a massive third wheel there. And then for a while, you know, after Rick didn't vote with them, we were kind of saying like the Lesu four, and War Dog on Twitter was like, nope, like, please just let David be a part of it. So mean.
Aw. No, they could get Lesu necklaces, you know, but with three pieces instead of two, like David and Rick Devins.
No, you bring up a good point, Shin. And I think at this point, I might give it to Lesu just because it's crazy to think about how two tribal councils ago, they were all targeting each other. And then fast forward like 3 days and they're all deciding to rally an alliance right there in the moment, grab two other people and vote out a big member of the opposition. It literally is night and day. And so I think especially from a post-merge perspective, it's going to be tough to outdo what Lesu has done in the past week.
Yeah, and I love how Aurora was like, oh, Karma owns that we're dysfunctional. Like, Lesu don't even... And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we know that we're the worst. Are you joking? Like, we openly gun for each other. And then Julia, I think, seemed like... I mean, as I said, her tribal council wasn't great. But, like, I think one of the things that was really bad was that when Rick was talking about all of them getting together to vote her out, she was like... Well, I thought you said you would never work together. And he's like, yeah, but now we've realized that we should because it's a good move. And you're obviously really scared of that. So it's not a good move for you. And I think maybe she just underestimated that people I get, you know, as I said, who are really battle hardened from playing a lot more of the game than she has in terms of, you know, voting in tribal councils may be able to make a logical decision over a super emotional one and work together in this obviously very complex mass frenemy relationship that Lesu have.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like Kama has the casual dysfunction, like they dabble in it, whereas Lesu are like the hardcore dysfunctional people. You know, they've gone to all the dysfunction conventions. You know, they have every word memorized of every episodic dysfunction mishap that they've underwent. Like they're very committed to it, whereas Kama's like, I want to dabble a bit in it and see how it treats me.
No. They have all the merch, all the cosplay, like it's a done deal.
Yeah, I mean, Karma voted together for literally one tribal council. One, the entire time. They're like, we've been together for 23 days, which is kind of irrelevant, where it's like, we've been to two tribal councils together, and one of them, you betrayed me. Like, that's a terrible track record. And even so, their dysfunction pales in comparison to Lesu. So, honestly, for Aurora to go and be like, you know, oh, you say you're not dysfunctional, it's just so funny to me. They're like, we openly dislike each other. At the last tribal council, we were, like, yelling and griping with each other. Yeah, I think they own the dysfunction, Aurora, so it's really fine.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. All right, well, let's get into this insane tribal council. And a lot went down, suffice it to say. Probably the most eventful tribal council. It's tough to say if this was one of the quote-unquote best ones. I think if you're coming from a level of chaos, it's definitely up there. It is very interesting that amidst everything that happened, it ends up being, what, just a simple 9-1 vote against Julia at the end of the day. But to track through it all and maybe to give listeners a nice timeline of what happens, we're going to play a game that we co-opted from the great show of Big Brother. It's called Before or After. And here's how it works. I'm going to go back and forth between the two of you and ask you if a certain event happened before or after another event in this tribal council. Obviously, you're going to have to answer before or after. If you get it wrong, no points for you. If you get it right, you get a point. Simple as that. Shannon, I'm intrigued to know, how many times did you watch this tribal council in preparation for the B&B?
Three times, I think. But then I was like going around trying to find like little scenes because there were so many iconic lines. So all up, maybe 3 or 4.
What about you, Liana?
Damn, girl, you did more work than me. I watched it twice. Once when it aired on TV and once again, you know, for posterity.
All right. Well, we shall see whose memorization and watching techniques will reign supreme here. Liana, let's start with you. So, again, it's going to be before or after.
Got it.
So, let's start in the very beginning of this tribal council, before the dam really broke loose. Did Julie talk about the downsides of being blindsided before or after Aurora did?
Oh my god!
Oh my god! I watched it 4 times. It's really hard. Okay.
So I also watched it in preparation for another thing that we will be doing later. And my god, okay. Julia talked about it first.
So it's Julie and Aurora. Which one? Basically, did Julie talk about it before or after Aurora did?
Julia and Aurora are the two people.
Julie.
No, okay,
God, Julie is gone because this is that just makes things so much easier from a name discrepancy perspective.
Julie talked about it first.
So are you saying before or after?
Whatever okay, well, can you say it again then, what the question is?
Julie, which, by the way, I like how we're saying her name now. We're doing the very lasso of Julie. Yeah. Did Julie talk about the downside of being blindsided before or after Aurora did?
Okay, before.
That is correct. It was before.
Okay. Jesus. Okay. All right.
Come on, God. All right, Shannon, going over to you. Did Julie declare herself a free agent before or after Kelly looks over and asks Julia what?
After?
I'm sorry. The correct answer is before.
Mike, I watched this 4 times. This should be Ilya.
I was like, honestly, Shannon, let me tell you something. So I watched this, like I said, in preparation for this episode, and I was like, oh, because I knew we were going to play this game. And I was like, oh, I feel bad for Shannon. I like definitely got this. And then Mike started asking questions. I was like, nope, I don't got this. Like, this is going to be a disaster.
We are mired in dysfunction here on the BNB. We revel in it.
We own our dysfunction.
All right, Liana, we're going back to you here. Did Jeff call out Julia's giggling before or after he encouraged Julie that Survivor fans 38 seasons in will not drag her for being a quote-unquote lunatic? So was the pep talk, or was Jeff calling out Julia's giggling before or after his pep talk to Julie?
Okay, the giggling was after.
That is correct again. 2 for 2.
I do love that Jeff Probst is completely divorced from what is happening in Survivor social media. You know, if you're going to be like guessing if people will or won't be dragging people, like, I mean, do fall on the side of dragging for sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, it depends on the audience too, Jeff. Like, I don't know who he's. I know that he responds to Twitter stuff, so maybe Twitter you would get less of that. But Facebook, for sure, they would hate that she's crying.
Yeah, like if I were to post, my pep talk would have been, look, you're an older woman. Facebook are going to be dragging you anyway. So it doesn't really matter what you do. It's about your demographic. It's not about your actions. So you can feel good about that.
My pep talk would be, Julie, so many people are at home stanning you right now, hardcore. Do it for the stands, Julie.
But just because you have a purple edit.
Yeah, exactly. You're an ironic queen.
That's
so
right.
Be sure to embrace that. All right, Shannon, going back to you. Did Julia accuse Aurora of quote unquote spilling the beans before or after Wardog stated how confused he was?
Okay, the Wardog thing was before. Whatever that answer is.
Okay, so you say that Julia accusing Aurora was after Wardog said how confused. Yes, that is correct. Wardog, I don't know if he was saying it in direct response to Aurora's Finding Nemo metaphor for all the creatures in the ocean. But yes, it was after that Julia then turns to Aurora and accuses her of spilling the beans, or maybe spilling the tank water.
Yeah, Aurora killed an analogy more than several poop jokes did. Like, that's impressive.
Well, who knew? I guess, I mean, Aurora is from Florida. They are heavily invested in their sea life. So I guess that does make sense that she naturally knows about all the oceanic life that frequent the Fijian Ocean.
I was so confused, though. I was definitely in Wardog's camp. I was like, I have no idea what you're saying. I don't know how this relates to anything. I'm so confused.
Yeah, she's saying, like, there are other creatures in the ocean that might stop the shark or contribute to eating the minnows. Like,
right.
How? Shark is pretty, I don't know, a predator for a reason.
It's also like, get your own analogy, you know? Like, she's trying to just, like, kind of work with David's perfect analogy that has now had several poop jokes attached to it. Like, get your own analogy at that point.
So I rewatched it. I was like, oh, I thought she said something along the lines of, well, there are other things in the sea that make the minnows get into the pack. And then I was like, oh, the minnows have like some social dynamics that we're not aware of. Get some marine biologists up in here to like study this. I didn't know if there were like external factors. It was just all a hot mess.
Bad analogy.
Then you take into account climate change and the temperatures of the ocean. Is that like the use of idols in the game?
Exactly. That big trash island that's in the middle of the ocean. How does that factor in? That's edge of extinction. Exactly. There's a little ream minnow swimming around up in there. I don't know.
I'm not swimming with the school, dude.
Whatever, dude. Your plastic bottle is totally lame.
If our next game is trying to work out anything that Aurora said, like I'm definitely failing that because I still have no idea.
Yeah, Aurora translation might be a game we work on in future B&B installments.
If she gets enough confessionals, for sure. But until then,
we shall see. So let's move on to Liana. Did Julia call Rick a passenger, which was the face crack of the Survivor season, apparently? Did Julia call Rick a passenger before or after Wardog started to propose getting rid of Aurora to Julie and Ron?
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I think she called him a passenger before the Wardog thing happened.
That is correct.
Oh my gosh, this is nerve-wracking.
I love how passenger really caught on. David brought up the metaphor and everyone was like, ooh, that's good. And it got so, over the course of literally 24 hours, it got to the point where when Julia mentions it, it's like the biggest yo mama joke that Survivor has ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got the like not joke from Rick last week. So now Julia is like, you're such a passenger, which by the way, is my favorite new insult. I've decided to, if anyone ever offends me, I'm gonna be like, whatever, Kevin, you're such a passenger. Just to insult them, they'll be like, what a weirdo.
Is that better than you're playing like a bunch of Davids in terms of like weird Survivor insults?
Oh, no, I think you're playing like a bunch of Davids is that's worse. Yeah. And that's funnier too. But the passenger thing is also funny.
Because if it was Survivor pilots versus passengers, that would be more scathing. But because Natalie specifically shaded the other tribe and her own tribe simultaneously, that feels much more scathing.
You know who's going to be the captain on the passenger season, like in that tribe? Poor sweet
Laurel. I'm going to say, like, if they cast someone who's under the age of 16 on Survivor, they'd be the ultimate passenger because they can't drive.
It'll be Laurel versus Terry Dietz, who's an actual pilot. And that's and then we'll have also, you know, we'll have T-Bird coming in to be the air hostess tribe, secret outcast tribe.
I am 100% here for this season.
Laurel's like, please just let me forget about this.
Well, I don't know. Actually, Mike White or David might be the captain because they're both used to pilots.
Oh, you went a different way with that. It's good because it can be interpreted many different ways.
Exactly. What does a pilot mean to you? Pilots mean so many different things.
I don't think pilots versus passengers is a bad thing, honestly. Like, the more we say it, I'm like, I'm into it.
You're being such a pilot right now, Shannon.
And the important thing is that when the pilots make moves and the passengers don't make moves, like either way, Survivor fandom is going to be angry, right? Because that's what we do.
Well, but then we can get into, okay, a passenger can become a pilot, but a pilot, no, I can't become a passenger.
I have to say, as a passenger on many flights, I don't want to become a pilot. I have no knowledge of becoming a pilot. I'm fine sitting in my seat and watching the PG rating of a version of Deadpool on my little screen. I do not want to become a pilot.
It sounds like you're watching the Ghost Island finale, honestly.
Well, let's move on here. Going back to Shannon, did Ron try to target Victoria in front of Victoria before or after Kelly asked Gavin, Julia, and Aurora if they were going to waver from their original plan?
After. Wait, sorry. The Kelly thing happened first, is what I'm saying. Okay.
That is correct.
Yes.
Ron did try to target Victoria in front of Victoria after Kelly was doing her stuff on the left side of the screen. And again, if you're talking about Sad Ron Clark had a bit of a snippy moment there where he was just completely ready to throw Victoria under the bus. She alleges that she could have very well gone home if she did not speak up in that moment.
Yeah, why did he do that? That was crazy. Like, that was the kind of thing that I needed to watch it four times because I kind of missed it on the first viewing that he literally threw her name out as she was standing next to him. Like, pure pandemonium.
Classic Ron.
All right, moving on to you, Liana. These are both quotes from Joey Amazing on the bench. Did Joe ask, "Where's the popcorn?" before or after he called it a live tribal?
Oh, okay. I know someone
to
said,
Joe. Come on.
Someone, no, I remember someone said something about popcorn, but I didn't think that that was.
Besides T-Bird, yes.
Okay, I think the popcorn thing happened first.
That is incorrect. Where the popcorn came after him declaring it a live tribal.
Scandaloso.
Do you love that the jury being on Edge of Extinction means that they talk about food now on the jury bench? They're just so hungry. It was pointed out to me on Twitter as well. They're so starved for attention, like for entertainment. Like, no wonder they're going crazy. But like, maybe it's not that the tribal counts were so interesting. It's just that they're so bored.
That's right. That's why Aubrey thought it was the best tribal council, like the most exciting that she's ever been to.
There's
nothing
delirious.
Else going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great slowdown. So, you know, a tribal council is going to be the most exciting.
Listen, to be fair, I'm not going to reprimand Aubrey. I know people are saying like, oh, she's being camera whorey or she's being muggy. But as someone who has been depicted making such big reactions in response to tribal councils, I really cannot throw a stone through my glass house right now.
Oh, yeah. My God. I'd love to see what you would do out there. You'd be like clapping and standing up.
I'd be doing a jig around the jury bench.
Yes.
Look, I have a gripe with Aubrey, though. I have to say she tweeted saying that as someone who was there firsthand for the, you know, Advantage Geddon with Suri and for the Malcolm double tribal, that this tribal council before it happened, but before we saw it, what, you know, had its own WTF moment. And like to have to be, you know, let's think about the international viewers here, to have to see that tweet. Go to sleep, go to an entire day of work, and then I had to go to a football game. I had basically like 24 hours with this like extreme bone-chilling fear in me. Like, you can't be putting that out into the universe. I was actually terrified.
Aw, that was your like seance for David, right? It was like, please let him survive.
I feel like you just have kept the candles perpetually lit, Shannon, for David Wright since the season started.
Well, I'm the David Wright expert and I love him, and I keep putting out, you know, summoning circles for him on Twitter, which have not failed to date. And I guess there's no way to know if it's, you know, David playing a really good game or my summoning circles that are keeping him alive. But I mean, I have to lean towards me. But for her to reference Suri and Malcolm, like, I'm still so traumatized from those two things. I'm not at all like Mike, who is completely insensitive and just laughs at it. And I think I'm still angry about that. I'm still holding on to some feelings of resentment towards Mike for that now that I'm saying it out loud. But for me...
But the good thing is that you only think you're holding resentment towards me.
No, I am Mike. But I'm traumatized from those two things. I'm angry at Mike about them. It's Mike's fault. And for her to reference that before I can watch the episode, like, come on, Aubrey. I'm scared, okay?
I like the part where you said it was Mike's fault.
Yeah, it's just like how actually, David being in his mind doing. This was all Mike's fault.
Fun fact, I believe Aubrey's cousin was actually at the Know-It-Alls where that all happened. And I met Aubrey's cousin. And I believe the first thing Rob said was he was pointing and laughing at Malcolm when he went home.
Nailed it.
I like that Aubrey's also mad at you about it, probably.
I'm sure. Listen, I'm just building a slow little bad black book of survivors that I have gone on the bad side of. So it'll two down, three down, 497 to go or so. It's only a matter of time. All right, let's go back to you, Liana. Did Aurora lament how she, quote, can't deal with soccer moms before or after Julie declared she's ready to jump ship?
Wait, isn't it my turn?
No, you just, oh, wait, you're right, it's Shannon.
Yeah, I'm taking my points. You can't give Liana my points. Aww. But also, what was the question? I was thinking so much about how it's my turn.
You were, that the question wasn't being asked towards you. That's just in one ear and out the other. Did Aurora lament how she, quote, can't deal with soccer moms before or after Julie declared she's ready to jump ship, complete with sitting on Santa Wright's lap?
Oh, that's really hard. So soccer moms versus the whole flipping thing. I think Julie jumped ship first. So I think the Aurora thing happened after.
That is incorrect.
Wait, no, it was Liana's question though, right? So Liana got it incorrect.
Okay, by the way, that's a little Kalish-y here, because according to my notes, I have Julie says, I'm out. I've seen the looks. Then Aurora says the thing about soccer moms. Then Julie runs over to the group to sit on David Wright's lap. So it's kind of like in between.
I'm sorry for throwing you under the bus, Liana. Thank you for helping me.
I declared specifically that she said she was ready to jump ship, which I don't believe she said the Aurora happened. The intention was there.
Okay, laps were mentioned, though. Was it the lap thing? I don't know. Whatever. I'm right. Give me the point, Mike.
No. I don't know. Wait, why am I helping you? You are totally right, Mike. Oh, my gosh. Right? Like, go. You know everything.
Liana, you and I are really like the Lesu tribe. One minute you say, I love that Mike is wrong. The next you're like, oh, please don't give her the point. Let's work together here.
My anger at Mike only grows, honestly.
As long as I can be the war dog who also refers to himself in the third person, then I think I'm definitely down with this analogy.
But he does a thing where he, in one sentence, he referred to himself in both the third person and the first person. So I guess, does it average out to a second person thing where he just keeps calling himself you?
Yeah, I don't know the math of grammar, how that works out. But
all right, Liana, let's go back to you here. I'm pretty sure it's your question now. So right before the vote happens, did Ron pull Gavin aside as the last conversation away from the tribal council seats? Before or after Julia told Wardog to shut up?
I have no idea. I think that Ron pulled Gavin over before the shut up Wardog.
That is incorrect. It happened right after it.
Wasn't that Shannon's question?
Now you're just getting me all confused, trying to bunko me, and you can't. Bullshit of bullshit.
Darn.
All right, Shannon, it's 3-2 right now. This is a live game for this live tribal. You still have a chance to tie it up.
Okay.
After the votes came in, did Kelly tell David, we'll all talk, before or after Wardog smiled, looked over at Rick, and muttered, Rick Devens?
The Kelly and David thing happened first.
That is correct.
Ooh, yes. Girl.
I'm glad that, you know, through the confusion of what happened first, Julie or Julia, and whose question it is, we've gotten to a point where we're now tied. So really made a lot of progress.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I'll do a tiebreaker here. Let's see. I'll give you both. We'll go back and forth here. I'm going to
give... This is like Mike coming up with a tiebreaker on the fly. He's like,
don't know what you're talking about. This is pre-planned. We had a plan when we walked in here. Nothing's changing. I'm in the pilot seat.
Yeah, everything's the same. There's multiple plans. This is just one of the plans.
So I'm going to give a quote from the voting booth. You're going to go back and forth to guess one person at a time as to who said it. So the first person to guess who said it wins.
Do we have a buzzer or like, wait, so are we calling in?
So we'll start with Leon and then we'll go to Shannon, back and forth, et cetera. Just keep guessing until someone gets it right.
Okay.
It's very simple.
I don't have to yell my own name.
I mean, you can if you want to. It's a free country, but it's not mandatory.
Okay. Good to know.
So you're going to identify the quote behind the person who went into the voting booth, let out a sigh, and just said, Lord.
Ron Clark.
That is correct. Boom. Buzzer beater.
I also would have totally known that. So we both would have had that. Yes. Continue, Mike.
Yes. So congratulations, Liana. I mean, you both proved that I think, you know.
Wait, did I just lose?
Yes.
What? I didn't even get a chance.
Nailed it.
This exact thing happened to me on a cruise. Don't forget the lyric competition, and I'm not over it, because the other girl got to sing first, and I truly should get a question.
Wait, can we go back to that? What was the circumstances of this contest?
The circumstances were that we had a really bad game master, much like you, Mike, who was a tiebreaker, and she sang first and she got it right, but I didn't even get a chance to prove myself. And I would have got the Ron Clark thing as well. Why did Liana got to go first if she won?
So she just sang the song, and then because she got the lyrics, she already automatically won?
Well, there'd been a full competition up until that point. But first prize was a water bottle, and second prize was a cap, which actually was better. So, I don't know. I'm very competitive on cruises.
I thought you meant the cap to the water bottle.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine we had to quit it together like Rick and David? No, it was just like an actual like hat. But anyway, this is just giving me really sad flashbacks to that. And I completely contest this decision. But you can move on if you want.
Well, Liana, congratulations. I think we've all proven no matter how many times that we've seen this tribal council, the memories will stick in our minds forever, including the sequence of events.
Oh my gosh, it's a disaster. It's a complete disaster. Speaking of disasters, let's talk about our Ron Clark rule. So we are putting together an addendum on the Ron Clark Essential 55 Rules, which, by the way, I finally decided to Google it this week because I was like, huh, maybe I should know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a book that is titled The Essential 55, an award-winning educator's rules for discovering the successful student in every child, which, by the way, a little self-serving to say an award-winning educator's rules, like, okay, Ron. Anyway,
do you think if like maybe if sad Ron had wrote it, it would be like a book just written by a man? If you want to read it, that'd be great. Just put it on your bookshelf. You don't even need to. You can like put it in the bathroom if you need to. Just please buy it.
He like tried to educate, but now he's just there. Yes, I could see it. Anyway, so he has 55 rules for educating this successful student. So we are going to make our addendum of rules to educate the successful survivor player. Nailed it. Okay, so the rules that we have so far are ream daily, speak softly and carry a big snake, don't be stupid, watch your back, always go through someone's bag 20 minutes ago, have Joey Amazing on your tribe, all's fair in love and war, dog. Dress for the blind side you want, and don't be a puppet master. Mm. So we have to come up with our rule for this episode. So I was like, in all the chaos, really drawing a blank. I have a couple ideas, but I really want to hear what you guys have to say. So the first one is just don't insult people at tribal. So no, that could like be a rule. The other one that I had was keep comma and carry on, because I'm still like holding on to this whole comma thing. But I don't know, Mike, if you had any ideas for the rule that we could have this week.
How about if you have to jump ship, make sure you bring water shoes
or like floaties?
Yeah, exactly. Like if you're going to jump ship, you're going to end up a floater.
Oh, wow. That's like really good.
No, you're going to end up a floater. No, that's like, you could be like the Rick poop. I think the bring floaties.
What do you think, Shannon? Do you have any ideas?
Well, mine was kind of just going through that through line of Ron Clark getting mugged, which I was obsessed with. And then I kind of made it into a poem. So my rule is Ron Clark's rule on what to do if you get mugged. This is it.
Okay.
Give them your wallet. Give them your phone. Do whatever they want. Please don't send me home.
Oh my. That's
like the most depressing Dr. Seuss book ever.
Yeah, it's sad Ron Clark, like the saddest educator in town.
Give them your wallet, give them your phone. What was the last bit?
Do whatever they want, please don't send me home. And can you just imagine Ron Clark giving lessons in how not to get mugged, but like sad Ron Clark doing it? Like, I want to see that movie.
This is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. I feel like it's a little too long.
Oh, Liana.
It's a poem. Okay, and the addendum.
How about
the addendum?
Give me your wallet. Give me my home, or something like that.
Give me my what?
Give them your wallet. Don't send me home.
Just make it. Give them your wallet. Did it?
Give them your wallet. Great rule for Ron Clark. Please give your wallet away.
If you get mugged.
Right, which this is definitely the essential Ron Clark rules on not getting mugged.
Yeah, but no, it's just the essential Ron Clark rules on how to be like a good survivor or like a good student. Sure, but like within that, anyone can get mugged. So this is just the one rule specifically about muggings. I think it makes sense. Give them your wallet.
Okay, so the rule is give them your wallet.
Yeah.
can we combine the two? Can we be like, if you're going to jump ship, give them your wallet?
Yes.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I like that one. Okay. Is it if you have to jump ship or if you're going to jump ship, give them your wallet?
If pirates invade your ship, give them your wallet. It's not getting long again. I really feel like just give them your wallet. Just give them the wallet.
Okay, give them your wallet if you're going to jump ship. I feel like give them your wallet just by itself. We're going to look back and be like, what the hell are we talking about?
Someone listen to this podcast, God forbid.
Give the cap that you won second place for not being able to get a chance to address the tiebreaker and the Don't Forget the Lyrics competition.
Please don't remind me about that, Mike. I'm still so angry at you about so many things that I'm holding on to. Like, I do think that if someone listening to this podcast, God forbid, is in a dicey situation, give them your wallet. It might be the most important rule we put on this list. Can save lives. It's an important rule.
All right, Shannon, I'm overruling you. I'm going to keep the give them your wallet part, but I think we have to say if you're going to jump ship, give them your wallet. That makes absolutely no sense, and that is perfect for the B&B. So
yeah, it makes sense the other way. Totally.
Exactly. I mean, nothing on this ever makes sense, but, you know, like, we're trying at least a little bit.
I love the tagline of the B&B. B&B, nothing on this ever makes sense.
That sounds about right. Yeah. All right. Speaking about things that don't make sense. So let's get into our next activity. So what I have done is I have put together a Mad Lib of this tribal council. So I was inspired by Eric's quote from The Edge of Extinction, where he said, there's a story here to tell my kids about not giving up. So I want to tell the story of this tribal council in the far future, what happened. So we are going to put all of this together, and it is one story. It is very long, so you're going to have to like deal with it while we get all of these things together, but I promise that it will pay off in the end.
So but before we get to that, just because you mentioned Eric and Shannon, I feel like as probably the biggest Disney expert I know, I would love to get your opinions on what we talked about last week. Is Disney eyes a thing?
Okay, Mike, firstly, thank you for the compliment, but you're still in my bad books. And Disney eyes, I think definitely yes, but I hadn't really thought of Eric as having Disney eyes. But now that I'm looking at it, like, to me, Disney eyes are just blue eyes. You know, maybe that's a bit simple, but, you know, I think blue eyes or big brown eyes. I'm not sure about this whole iris thing. I feel like this is more a biology question than a Disney question.
An animated biology. I know, I was like, oh, that's not a thing.
Did
that's
you do animated biology or PhD?
That was actually, yeah, my PhD was on Disney animation and biology.
Yes, your thesis was on Goofy's Anatomy.
Yes.
which is my new favorite Disney Plus show is Goofy's Anatomy, the Grey's Anatomy spinoff.
Okay, so Mad Lib. all right, so let's get into this. So, Shannon, I'll start with you. So I need an Edge of Extinction contestant that was present at the Tribal Council.
I just want to give a lot of love to Karma.
McKeith or Whitney.
Literally anybody but two McKeith people in the cast.
I will go with David Wright, obviously.
Okay, Mike, I need a relative. So sister, brother, aunt. Second cousin.
Mailman.
That's okay. Sure.
Oh no, what? That was my first
thought. Do you have a very close relationship with your mailman? This is like the milkman equivalent of our time. Okay, Shannon, I need a plural noun.
Okay. Any plural noun?
Yeah, any plural noun.
Fishes. Does that work?
Yes. Perfect. Mike, I need an emotion.
God,
mailman is not an emotion.
Mailman this. But let's say bitter.
Shannon, I need a pet peeve.
People making big moves for the sake of it.
Perfect.
Wow. I'm very on brand.
Just as well as your Ron Clark rule.
okay, this is gonna be interesting. Okay, Mike, I need an animal.
Ooh, barracuda.
Oh. Shannon, I need another animal.
Cat.
Okay. Mike, I need an activity.
Paintball.
Okay.
These matters are getting very diverse.
Shannon, I need an emotion.
Angry. No, I wanted to take bitter. I can only think of one emotion now that you've said bitter.
That's the only one I have inside, bitter. Okay, Mike, I need a noun.
The mouth.
Shannon, a verb ending in ing.
Playing.
Okay, Mike, a noun?
Bottle.
Wow, if someone like just tuned in for this part of the podcast, they'd be like, wow, this is like the name parts of speech podcast. okay, Shannon, another verb ending in ing.
Reaming.
Perfect. Okay, Mike, a verb ending in ing.
Let's say fornicating.
Mike, why are you this person? You went with mouth and then fornicating, and I'm like, playing.
Listen, I got far away enough from mailman that hopefully nothing lurid's going on.
What is your relationship with your mailman? I'm so scared.
See? Okay, I need, Shannon, another verb ending in ing.
Okay, now I can only think of fornicating. This is unfair. I'm going to be super Disney about it and say charming.
All right, Mike, past tense verb.
Let's say hit.
Okay, Shannon, let's see if you can handle this. A body part.
Disney eyes.
Perfect. Mike, adjective.
Cuddly.
Aww.
The story that you're weaving in your mind with the mailman continues to be very interesting to me.
Yes, the Mike and the Mailman fan fiction writes itself.
Yeah, this is like the Rorschach test for Mike. okay, Shannon, a survivor advantage.
Nullifier. I don't nullifier.
Okay, I don't nullifier. All right, Mike, I need a number.
Let's go with 73.
Yay. Another not where I number, go with Shannon.
That. I feel like I'll just do the B&B staple that Mike didn't do, 69.
Nice. And one more number, Mike.
2.
Okay. Shannon, I need a verb that ends in ED.
Loved.
Mike, a former Survivor player.
Rudy Bosch.
And finally, Shannon, a noun.
Horse. Is that a noun?
Yes.
This makes me think about, like, do I know what words are? Anyway.
You should see my search history. It's like part of speech, vote. Part of speech, like tackle. So it's very embarrassing.
I have to stop myself from like grabbing my phone right now and just like Googling what an adjective was. So just like don't mind me.
A noun is a person, place, or thing. Okay.
And a horse.
So, and a horse. Exactly. Perfect example. Okay, let me tell the story. Okay, so this is the story that David Wright told his great, great, great mailman about the epic tribal council from episode 9 of Edge of Extinction.
Wait, I love this because we turned a family thing into just the way David Wright would describe his mailman.
I said relative, Mike, and you said mailman.
So he's a great, 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 great mailman. He really is.
Just such a great mailman. Okay. I remember the night well. It all started when Julie talked about being on the wrong side of the fishes. Aurora got bitter and said, well, there's many worse things going on in the world, like people making big moves for the sake of it.
Yes. Oh, my God. Aurora, speak truth.
Aurora is not being subtle with that.
Exactly. Then David Wright said, I said something that I will never forget. I said, I saw a school of barracudas that were eaten by a cat, and I was paintballing at the time.
Wow, David is doing very exotic paintball.
Rick said, I might be the paintball. This comment set Julie into a fit of anger. I feel like a mouth as she started playing. Okay. Aurora started babbling. Julie told Rick, you're such a bottle. Then everything went crazy. Everyone started reaming. Ron was fornicating and Kelly was charming. out of nowhere.
That's a bad sequence of events.
I don't exactly know what happened there. Out of nowhere, Julie hit over and sat on David's Disney eyes. My Disney eyes.
Oh, no, that's even worse than on
It's a cuddly tribal, Jeff, Rick said. It's the cuddliest. This is the cuddliest as it ever gets, David, I added.
David's really taking a page from the War Dogs book.
I know. He's just talking about himself in third person. Finally, we went to vote, and after all the chaos, Rick played the idol nullifier on David.
Jeff,
this is what he remembers, okay, telling his great, great, great mailman. Jeff Probst revealed the votes. 2 votes for Kelly, 69 votes for David, and 73 votes for Julia.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
They all loved on her, said Rudy Bosch from the jury. Because he was the returning player that season, y'all remember. Take horse of yourselves and take horse of each other, Julia said after getting her torch snuffed. The end.
Yeah, that is an addendum to an invisible Ron Clark rule. Take horse of each other.
Take horse of yourselves and take horse of each other.
I feel extremely bad for David Wright's poor mailman who's just trying to do his job and deliver some mail and had to be subjected to that story. Like, yeah, sir,
I don't know what you're talking about. I've had the routes to get to. You're talking about someone sat on your eyes.
So originally I had this mental image of like, oh, David Wright telling the story to like, oh, maybe Michael say like second cousin once removed. How funny. And it's like the kid in bed, like, the Princess Bride. But now in my head, I have David Wright chasing down his mailman down the street. Old David Wright is like bathrobe and cane just being like, let me tell you a story.
This is a story of how David Wright doesn't get his mail delivered anymore.
Right.
So this is a story within a story of David Wright explaining why he gets no mail. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And he's explaining that to, like, an ATM or something.
Right.
Poor David Wright, you've made him, like, completely senile. When really it was our words, so we're senile. So, come on, it's not David's
fault. Look, I mean, when your closest ally plays the idol nullifier on you, that's not very well for your social game.
Classic, like, Rick and David, though, right?
That's true. I didn't even think about it. What does that even mean? Like, he played the idol nullifier, so if David played an idol on himself, it wouldn't count. Yikes. That's okay. He was very cuddly, so it's fine.
It was the cuddliest travel council.
Exactly.
Oh boy. Well, I really horsed that game, and I horse you, Liana, for taking care of that game.
I'll tell my mailman about it tomorrow.
So for my question this week, I actually have a little bit of a mini game to impart on the two of you, and hopefully I will not biff it like I did last time here. So I don't know if y'all know this, but yeah, we have a new engaged couple amongst the survivors. Joe Anglum and Sierra Dawn Thomas are tied the knot, much like Joe likes to untie a lot of knots in challenges. The Survivor Facebook page went gaga. So we're going to do we're going to dip our toes in the water of Casuals Corner. We're not on the lesu spectrum of Casuals Corner. We're more in the comma thing of like, oh, we're going to try it out and see what happens. So basically what's going to happen here is I'm going to read 2 comments from the Survivor Facebook page. You're each going to privately write down which one you think got more reactions. Now we're talking about reactions overall. So that could be the thumbs up, the heart, the laughing guy, Mr. Sadness, surprising Sally, and the rest. So you have to write down. We'll use the honor system here, and we'll see after a few questions who gets it right. First, I want to ask you, Shannon, what is your reaction to the big news?
My reaction was, wow, I'm really following Joe Anglum and Sierra Dawn Thomas on Instagram. I need to really take, stock of who I'm following on here. But no, I'm very, very happy for them. I do think it's amazing that everyone's so impressed with Joe that he didn't wait for the reunion. And it's like, is that something we should be impressed with, or something that's just kind of like a neutral thing that he didn't wait to propose at the reunion, which is not a great proposal, especially if he doesn't win. But no, super happy for them.
I was 100% upset that he did not propose at the finale, because I feel like, the Survivor fan that loves complaining, I would love to complain about the fact that there was a proposal at the finale. Like, come on. But no, very like, congratulations to the two of them. Very exciting. Also, in terms of like writing my score down, I pulled out my notepad. The only thing I have written down on this piece of paper is commonness. So I don't know if that somehow relates to Joe and Sierra's engagement, but that's a thing that has happened.
That'll be their wedding hashtag.
Hashtag commonness.
Sierra is not involved in this season.
Thinking that, you know, like when David Wright wins the season, I really just wouldn't want their proposal to take away from that. But that was kind of what I was thinking. I think we should have to come up with a wedding hashtag for them, because this is a big thing that now that I've got engaged, I get ads all the time for websites that you have to pay them to come up with a wedding hashtag for you. And like, that's crazy to me, especially because so many of them are terrible. So I feel like we should just do that service for them for free.
Mike, did you have a wedding hashtag, or Shannon, are you going to have a wedding hashtag?
I did have one. I was very lucky. Mine was Love in Bloom.
Oh, that's
pretty easy. I was able to benefit from that.
Did you pay for that? Did you pay to get
that
written? Okay, good. Good. Cause the cost like $30. Mine is Becoming Gus, cause that's going to be my last name, but it's like there's one G, two S's. So it's like Becoming Us, Becoming Gus. It makes more sense when you write it down. Yeah.
Did you pay $30 for that?
No, my cousin is a copywriter, so she just gave it to me as my engagement present, and then she had it like made onto a block of wood. So as my engagement present.
Is that like the patent of wedding hashtags? Like, oh, I'm sorry, I have this carved into a block of wood, so yes, like it's legally mine now.
I think
it's like an idol. It's like it's your possession right now.
Yeah, I think that my cousin like really wanted to make sure I would go with her hashtag, because you know everyone was suggesting hashtags, so she was like, it is in wood now, so you have to use it, and I will. So it worked.
That's smart.
Is that like the Australian version of it being stone? It's in wood, so therefore it's just as permanent.
We don't have stone here, actually. So yes.
What?
No, I'm joking. You guys, come on.
Oh,
come on.
I would believe it.
I guess if we're Mars has plenty of stone.
Okay, fine, but we're not on a different planet. It's just Australia.
I will say, if we're coming up with wedding hashtags off the top of our noggins here, what about like Rope-a-Joe?
Nope.
Terrible. That's so bad.
Well, you come up with a better one.
Well, okay. There's something with Dawn, right? Like Dawn is pretty, so like. I don't know if she's going to take his last name, but it could be like the Dawn of Anglem. Nope.
Yeah, it's really hard on the spot. Can I call my cousin?
Yeah. Well, okay. The B&B will subsidize $30 to get a hashtag.
No, because they're also bad.
A block of wood and send it to Utah, postage free. We know a mailman that can get it to them.
About something with Anglem, like Anglem for Love? No, bad as well. Very hard to do on the spot.
That's so cute. Anglem for Love. Aww.
How about like Worlds Apart Together?
But then we have to remember Worlds Apart as a season, which I don't want to.
Sierra Dawn Thomas takes care of horses. Take horse of yourself and take horse of each other. Now I know that's very long for
hashtag just take horse of yourself and give them your wallet. Did it.
There we go. Hashtag take horse of yourself and give them your wallet. I think we found a winner, folks.
They
put it on the block of wood.
Guys, we're so good.
All right. So let's get into this here. So again, you're both going to answer each question. I'm going to read two comments. You have to write down which one you think has more likes, and we'll see how you do at the end of this. First one, A, Survivor Dream Wedding, .. Ordained Minister Jeff, .. says, come in, guys, .. You draw rocks to see if you sit on the bride or groom side, .. Unity candles lit by torches, .. Instead of pronouncing them husband and wife, .. say, the tribe has spoken, .. and honeymoon suite, .. drop your buffs.
Oh my God.
So that's A.
So one, I know you that like you pulled that from Casual's Corner because it's terrible. Like as someone who's used to reading them. Oh my God. Okay. All right.
So, I feel like these are all comments as well. I did not have enough ingenuity considering what you just heard from Rope-a-Joe. I didn't have much creativity left to come up with these.
Right. I'm just saying, like, I believe that that's a real. I mean, I know that it's not like real versus fake, but like, that's real.
So that's A. B, no one talked to me for the rest of the day.
Okay. See, I feel like, so the first one was describing like a Survivor themed wedding, and I feel kind of sad because I know that they're not going to have anything really Survivor themed probably in their wedding, but like me, and I've never been on Survivor, my proposal was Survivor themed. So like, what does it say about me that my nuptials are more Survivor-esque than probably what Joe and Sierra's will be?
It's cute.
Is it cute?
I think it's very sweet.
Sure. You go, girl.
Get Gust. Right. So you get long Survivor dream wedding versus no one talk to me for the rest of the day. Liana, which one do you think has more reactions?
I said B.
What'd you say, Shannon?
I said A.
The correct answer is B. Ugh. A got 120 reactions. B got 491 reactions.
Wow. A got way more reactions than I thought it would, because long comments don't get a lot of likes, because apparently reading is very difficult, especially with all the ellipses.
I've heard it's fundamental.
Say what? Fundamental. But yeah, that interesting.
Yeah, as a casual expert, like, this also feels like an unfair fight. But no, that was my bad. It should have been B. That was just a really bad answer.
She actually said B, I'm pretty sure.
Thanks, Liana. Thank you so much.
All right, let's move on to question two here. These are both disparaging comments against Joe. So not all the casuals are on Joe's side here, despite the good news. A, awesome. Now, Joe, lose that awful stash. B, so many seasons, I can't remember when they were on together. I've liked seeing him on this current season, though. He's a good player, but he's still no Malcolm or Ozzy.
You know, it's so funny to hear the casuals' comments without, like, me pulling them, because it's so stereotypical. Like, I think sometimes, like, oh, maybe I just picked the ones. No. This is what they're like. Okay. All right. I think I have my answer.
Okay. I said A. Because Liana said to do the shorter ones, right? So
I said A as well.
A is correct. B got 139 reactions. A got 215. 215 people believe Joe should get rid of that stash.
It's more than 215.
I guess we shall see if he goes clean shaven down the aisle.
That's a lot of likes. How many, do you know, Mike, do you know how many people like the original post, the like Sierra and Joe post?
Let me check. I know I do have a tiebreaker about how many comments it got, but let's see. I believe it's around like 1,500 likes, maybe. Oh, wow. I was way underestimating. 23,000 likes.
Oh my god!
Whoa. Okay, so to put things in context, that's a lot. That's like 10 times more than sort of the normal posts that we get, like when I go through the casuals comments. So like, this is crazy.
Yeah, especially because none of those casuals know who Sierra Dawn Thomas is. Like, that's 23,000 likes for Joe and Joe alone.
Right. They're like, oh, wait, she was on Survivor?
Joe Anglin is engaged to a human being, and that's it. That's all we need.
Speaking of that, let's move on to the Sierra shading side of things.
Oh, shame.
A, I don't know. I just don't see it. She seems a bit high maintenance for Joe, and high maintenance is capitalized.
Whoa, girl.
B, I remember her, .. Not a fan, but I'm happy for you, .. Joe, smiley emoji.
Ooh. Which one was more words?
She's like literally counting characters. Okay, all right, I have mine.
All right, Liana, what'd you say?
Okay, I said A.
Shannon?
Also A, because it was shorter.
A is correct. B, the I remember her, not a fan, got 30 reactions. A, I don't know, I just don't see it. She seems a bit high maintenance for Joe, got 59 reactions.
C, the I remember her was the yeah. Boy.
Well, congratulations, Liana. You really are in the casuals' brains right now. You were 3 for 3 in this game.
Yeah, that is terrifying. I think I need to go wash my brain.
I thought I had seen some comments that were like, just in the patron group talking that the casuals had said that it was a spoiler because we haven't even seen them interact on this season. I think they might think that Sierra is Kelly Wentworth, which is kind of concerning to me because Kelly Wentworth is pretty much the protagonist of the season. Like, you should know that she doesn't look like that just because they're both blonde.
Oh, I mean, I have 100% seen comments that are like, oh, like, do they fly them home during, like, when they're not on the island? Like, it's only a week between episodes. It's crazy. They would fly them home. So, you know, just as a, like a reference of where we might be in terms of the casuals, like, perspective.
But yeah, I guess
not all casuals are the same. We love them all.
And I thought it would be proper to check in with the casual, considering that this is a big piece of miscellaneous Survivor news. So it's always good to get the reaction. I know Rob and T-Bird both sort of talked about their mother celebration, and it does seem like there's a celebration across the board, save, you know, the combined, what, doing some quick math here, like basically 450 people that either made fun of or reactions that made fun of either Joe or Sierra for this very good news.
No, I mean, good for them. Like, as a bitter cat lady who apparently is the least happy, according to that one study. And did you guys hear about that?
No.
Did I hear about that on News AF? Maybe it was like dog owners are the most happy and like cat owners are the least happy. So
what?
As the least happy.
My cat has an Instagram and it's the light of my life. Stop that.
Aww.
That makes me so happy.
I can also say, as someone who has suffered from anxiety and depression for nearly 30 years of my life, I'm a dog owner, so I feel like we might all be the exception to the rule here.
That's true. That's true. But anyway, so happy for them. Good
what
for them.
What if you own a horse?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, horse, barracuda. I don't know, like, how those animals
if you
play.
Own a mailman.
If you own a mailman, yeah. School of barracudas that were eaten by a cat. I don't know how that, you know. What if you're paintballing? I don't know.
If they use take horse of each other, I'm going to build them. And we'll split it. Aww. 10, 10, 10. That's like $15 for me when you convert it to Australian money. So, yeah.
I'll take it.
Exactly. Listen, we're happy with any sort of a fee we get here on the B&B. Let's move on to our final segment of each and every week here, the question of the week. Last week's question of the week, in honor of David's greatest relative, the mailman, create an address for a Survivor location, person, or moment. So we're setting the mailman on a harrowing journey here through many Survivor residences.
Why are you obsessed with your mailman?
Yeah, who's going to say this question now in terms of the mailman? Like, it takes on a whole new meaning.
So we'll read all of your responses out there, and then we'll read our own. First, from Anthony S., room 609, Slam Tower, Slam Town.
I love that, like, people remember Slam Town. We need to bring that back. I don't know how, but somehow.
I love that Slam Tower because it makes me feel like Nakatomi Plaza. Like, this could be like the setting of some sort of Survivor Die Hard thing.
Mm. I love it.
All right, next up, John Tinkham, 9 Passenger Circle, Carter's Cliff, Fiji, 69696.
Ugh, I love this incorporation of the whole passenger pilot thing. Like, definitely love it.
And I love that it's a circle as well. It's like, you don't even get a street. You have to move around in one shape and not even have an end to your road.
Poor Laurel. Who lives there, I assume.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. That's where Laurel lives. Aw.
Parker Schimler says, 69 Bayonetta Drive, apartment 6. This is the address of Courtney's shitty apartment from Exile Island.
How many of these are 69? Like, what percentage of these?
The vast majority.
Ghana, this is all on you.
You're welcome. As like a 28-year-old adult woman, nailed it. Like, so good. Love that I'm here.
So hopefully we did not, you know, dox Courtney Merritt by having Shane now get her apartment number and finally exact his revenge after what? 16 years after the fact.
Well, it's very fitting. Giving our conversation about the Kasaya tribe, you know, also being dysfunctional, you know, like, kind of fits in.
Shane has just been listening to every Survivor podcast since then, just trying to find that address. He got to the very, very end of this B&B episode and was like, finally.
Yeah, this is what did it.
And the cat has caught the barracuda. All right, let's move on to Dan Sinensky. 1 Upolu Loop. It's Coach's house on a cul-de-sac that only the Upolu 5 can live on. Sophie lives at 2 Upolu Loop, but it's much nicer. Edna and Cochran sleep in Coach's guest room and on his couch, respectively.
I can see it. I like that.
I do love that that Coach down just sort of like has people over, and just Cochran is perennially living on his couch, despite the fact that he's a Survivor winner.
I have this mental image of then what their cul-de-sac barbecues look like, where they're all like coming out, bringing their own dishes. And it's like, oh, we're all a loving family. Let's pray. And then, you know, there's always that little bit of tension.
I feel like people are refusing to go to barbecues with Brandon Hance nowadays.
Yeah, I don't say, and also probably with Albert too. Albert feels like that neighbor who's just like takes your ear and is just way too chatty every time you see them, so much so that you like actively avoid them when they're trying to leave the house the same time as you.
Right, it's like you time it. You're like, ooh, let me just pause inside for a brief sec, let them leave.
All right, Adam Goldman says the post office at 18 Heroes Lane, where JT sends his love letters with idols to 69 This Game Is Flawed Drive. These idols can be used anywhere, including Australia, unless that person decides not to play it and gets voted out immediately.
We have idols, but not stone here in Australia. And I also really enjoy that, firstly, Russell Hans wasn't in Australia. I mean, like, they weren't filming in Australia. But also, in trying to come up with my own, it was really hard to come up with the numbers. Like, street names are good, numbers are hard, and so everyone just filled in 69 right there. Like, such classic B&B, honestly.
Mm-hmm. So the reunion at Champions versus Contenders, where it was just Russell Hance's hat, like that every once in a while just pops into my head, and I'm so happy whenever I think about that. So for some reason this brought up those like similar thoughts, so I was very pleased with this answer.
Yeah, that hat on the stool is very much like if Russell got snapped by Thanos, you know.
So good.
Well, my thought was if like he had gotten turned into a hat by some sort of witch that he crossed. Like, this is his Beauty and the Beast like transformation.
Yes. His Disney eyes got him turned into a hat.
Put me on your head.
Oh my god. Can you imagine? What a terrible Disney movie that would be. Like little Russell Hans like shuffling around as a hat.
Oh, I would love it. I would love him to sing Beauty and the Beast as a hat, fedora flapping up and down as they're dancing along.
You have to do that impression right now. Russell Hats singing Beauty and the Beast.
Tale as old as Tom. Dumbass girl and beast.
So good.
John says 1823 Exile Island DR is a Coachway Tai Chi class building. So Coach has really just bought so much real estate out here on the island.
What a I was going to say social media mogul, but what an actual mogul.
What a real estate mogul.
That's right.
Finally, Justin Feinberg says 6969 yep. Exile Island Drive is the address of the hotel where Terry Dietz spent some private time with his wife on the ward.
My wife.
We got a shout out to his wife this week.
I know. He's been watching the show with my wife.
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone thought that it was bad that Karma just wanted to get to the loved ones visit, but Gavin was just trying to make a really extended my wife joke, so, like, I respect it.
Yeah, like, I'm here for that.
All right, so Shannon, I know you had a bit of hard time sifting through the numbers. What did you settle upon for your address to give to David Wright's mailman?
Okay, so 69, no. For me, I was like, well, who would I want to find, you know? And so at all times, I'm wondering, where is Tony Vlachos? Where are his clones that he left behind on the island? So I feel like I looked into my address book of tricks, and I found that he and his clonies are at Top 5 Baby, Llama Lane, off Spy Shack Street in Clone County on Fiji, I guess.
Clone County!
I love it.
That's great. I love Clone County, especially.
Because Tony goes missing, you know, and you're like, where is he? I'm always wondering where Tony is, so yeah.
Well, is it buried, though?
Because I could also imagine, like, Clone County is entirely populated by Tony's clones.
Yeah,
so it's
not
easy to lose him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, can you just imagine, like, it's kind of like a beautiful place. You know, I think Josh kind of outlined it for us, but just Tony clones running around, like, I want to go live there.
Well, now I'm imagining more Beauty and the Beast instead of the song Belle taking place in the village. Now it's all Tony saying bonjour.
Oh my god.
Can you do that?
Bonjour.
Tony likes it.
Yeah, there goes the baker with the tray like always.
That's
and he's
great.
Going, Oh boy. All right, Liana, what did you have to say?
Oh my goodness. Nothing as crazy as that. So our rule, Ron Clark rule number 56 is Ream Daily. So I was inspired by that. So this is 56 Ream Daily Drive, which was previously the Edge of Extinction Circle on the Island of Extinction. And that's the address for mailing all of the puzzles and bottles and riddles and random rice packages that are all sent to the Edge of Extinction. That's where you send them.
That's like her mail forwarding address now.
Exactly.
So though, will she be receptive to any maps she receives?
Ooh, it's a great question. I don't know about that.
Return to sender, dude.
yeah, I don't do that, bro. Send it back.
I did love in this episode how Eric was like, he was talking about how no one's going to leave the island. He's like, Green's too invested to leave. It's like, yeah, at this point, definitely yes.
Yeah.
Green's like, might as well last. Emeralds will stay here a little bit longer. All right, so I had 53 Gentry Gardens in honor of the one and only Jan Gentry, because this is the address of the Survivor Pet Cemetery. So this is all, I was inspired by watching commercials for the new Pet Cemetery, and I was thinking, this is where, you know, the little baby bat was, the chicken legs were, this is where poor Balboa, Rupert's snake is.
I'm loving this dead animal conversation.
There are two open graves for the chickens that were never found because Wendy released them. Like, all the animals from Survivor's past end up here. And who knows, in Edge of Extinction fashion, maybe they might have a second life in this game.
Yeah, nothing funnier than dead pets.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? What is the dead pet cemetery? Like, you said a commercial? Is that a real thing, or are you making this up? Well,
Pet Cemetery is a Stephen King novel. It became a pretty popular movie. Now there's a new version of Pet Cemetery coming out with the one John Lithgow.
Right, okay.
I will not be seeing that. And even like this Pet Cemetery conversation we're currently in.
We're going to mail Mike to...
Yeah, I mean,
69, don't talk to us again, drive.
As I said, I'm a vegetarian and I only eat mayonnaise, so this is why I don't like talking about the Pet Cemetery.
Would that be your new Twitter bio? I'm a vegetarian and I only eat mayonnaise.
That'll be on my tombstone and it will probably be linked to why I'm buried.
Yeah, but your tombstone will be like Shannon Gates. She was a vegetarian, only ate mayonnaise. Yeah. Quote, you be horse to yourselves and horse each other.
Yeah, you know, like Shannon Gates, she only ate mayonnaise, will be like one of those tombstones that also like explains the death, so it's good.
And you'll be buried right next to the pet cemetery.
I don't want to be in Mike's creepy pet cemetery.
It's not mine, it's Jan Gentry's.
I don't want to be there. I don't want to be getting Mike's mail from his mailman at the pet cemetery. I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, don't open that. Those are for my eyes only.
Uh-oh.
All right, so next week's question. in honor of Eric sort of talking about how on the Edge of Extinction there's really nothing to do, it goes from a million to zero, coupled with that silent scene that I was talking about before, what's a good way to pass time around camp? You have a bunch of ways you can reach out with these your responses to this question. You can always use hashtag RHAPBNB on social media. You can reach out in the Patreon Facebook group, on Reddit, on the Rob Has a Podcast, RobHasAWebsite.com post. You can email us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com. In addition to any games you might have in mind, we do have a couple of games coming up in the hopper, thanks to listeners like you. So be sure to send us any other ideas. If this week is indicative, we are open for anything and everything. And we're going to go over all of your time passing activities, and I'm sure much more, everything double elimination wise, with this upcoming episode of Survivor 38 next week. I'm really excited for this guest. So there is a YouTube user by the name of Per Diem. For those of you that might not know him, he is a YouTuber that creates content on Survivor, Big Brother, maybe a little bit of Amazing Race. And he is, without question, probably the best Survivor YouTuber I have ever seen. He is so thorough. He's so entertaining. He edits so well. He just puts together such compelling videos. He's been doing these for a few years, and I'm so happy that he is coming on to join us, I believe making his podcast debut on the BNB to talk about next week's episode.
Very, very excited.
That would definitely be a lot of fun. That's a really good guest.
Yeah, and I think with like the craziness that we might get, especially because I think it's going to be a double boot. So I think it's going to be a lot jam packed into an hour. Like, it's going to be a fun show.
And of course, we would want to bring on someone who is used to the YouTube algorithm cramming a lot of information into a short time frame. So we'll see if Per Diem keeps us on the clock. If you have not heard of him and you want to check out his great stuff before he comes here on the B&B, just go to YouTube and type in P-E-R-I-D-I-A-M. I know it's pronounced Per Diem. It's spelled a little bit differently. But if you check that out, he has a bunch of great videos. Most recently, he's done the top five challenge beasts for females and males. He's got a whole backlog of great Survivor and Big Brother content. But before we move on to the Per Diem, let's bid adieu to Miss Shannon Gates. Shannon, thank you so much for coming on and joining us for all of this. I'm so sorry I could not give you a cap as a consolation prize for these games, but I hope that you enjoyed us as much as a big heaping spoonful of mayonnaise.
I did. I really enjoyed Liana and Mike. You were there. As well. Just like, now that you brought up the cap thing, I'm just so angry again. No, but I always love coming onto the B&B, talking about how I'm going to die, talking about pet cemeteries, working out Mike's weird sexual fantasies with his mailman. So I'm going to go take a shower right now. And thank you for having me.
Of course.
Smart call.
So how can people follow you on social media? And do you want to do a bit? So International Survivor is still, you know, has a little bit of time left in the tank before we end up premiering it onto the scene this summer. But do you want to preview a bit as to what's to come with Rehap Ups?
Yeah. OK, well, you can find me at Shannon Gates, G-A-I-T-Z. Yeah, as Mike said, Survivor South Africa is starting, I think, 12 hours after Edge of Extinction ends. So, you know, no need to break. We still, yeah, and Mike is having a baby in the middle of all that. And he's obviously my co-host for Survivor South Africa. So that's going to be very, you know, easy for him. But what we're going to do is, yeah, obviously be recapping it in a month from now, which means you still have a month. If you, for some reason, haven't watched last season of Survivor South Africa, get in touch with me. You will binge it in one day because you won't be able to stop. It's that good. I will say that on every podcast that I'm on. So, yeah, Survivor South Africa coming up. And, yeah, you can. I can give you all of that. Also, please continue to like my David Wright Summoning Circle tweets, because one like equals one prayer, and we're really working against something here. But no, yeah, this has been super fun, and I look forward to continuing to talk about the season with everyone on Twitter.
Let's make sure we get as many prayers in there as there were reactions to the post. I'm just, please, no one talk to me for the rest of the day in response to Joe and Sierra's engagement. Let's get that ratio going similarly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Smart call.
Liana, how can people follow you, and what do you have going on podcast-wise as of late?
Oh, wow. So you can find me on social media at Liana Boras, L-I-A-N-A-B-O-R-A-A-S. And of course, in addition to doing the B&B, Mike and I are joined by Brent Wolgamont to talk about all things RuPaul's Drag Race, which season 11 is being absolutely insane right now. So it is going to be a very exciting episode. If you're very interested, definitely check that out. And yeah, that's about it. Also, super excited for us International Survivor to come back. So looking forward to the two of you covering all of the craziness.
Yeah, I wonder if could we compare this week's Untucked, Liana, to the insanity of this tribal council, in a manner of speaking?
It was very parallel. Yes, I can definitely see the comparisons. It was like, I can't handle this much craziness, like in my reality TV two nights in a row. Can we all calm down?
Yeah.
But loving all of it.
Brooklyn Heights was basically the Victoria role of just putting her head in her hands and being like, this is crazy. She's being crazy.
I would love this idea of like Kelly or Victoria just like piling on logs on top of themselves during the tribal council. I'd be very much here for it.
Just try to bury themselves. You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the Star Trek Discovery podcast I'm doing with Jessica Lease. And speaking of Jessica Lease, Amazing Race 31 is starting up very soon. If you haven't listened to it yet, her, I, and Dan Heaton put out a cast preview slash draft from all the way back in June to give our thoughts on the cast. I also did an interview with host Phil Kagan this past couple days, where he gave his thoughts on not only the theme, but each of the teams as well. Shannon, I'm intrigued to hear from you. I know you probably have a dog or cat in the race, considering one specific team. But what are your thoughts about this upcoming season of The Amazing Race?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I mean, I'm a Amazing Race casual from way back. You could definitely put me into the casuals corner there. Like, as much as I make fun of the Survivor casuals, pretty much the only team I remember is Yuchenna and Joyce, who I feel are kind of like the Boston Rob of The Amazing Race, even though Boston Rob was obviously on The Amazing Race. I also remember him. No, I'm super excited to get back into it. And my cat in the race is Brett LaBelle, who I love, and who was on the Survivor New Zealand podcast. He promised a LaBelle's lobster hat to the Chizzy winner, went on The Amazing Race, and then came back and still sent the hat, which I thought was very kind, because I thought by the time I messaged him again, he'd be like, I've kind of been through something here. Like, I really don't have time for your Chizzy award. But no, Brett's the best. Brett and Chris, I'm 1,000% rooting for them, and I definitely will be watching.
So just to be clear, you received a cap and you were not angry that time around.
No, I didn't receive a cap. It went to the Chizzy winner of Survivor New Zealand. But it's okay, because I have so many caps from the cruises I go on, where I compete in every single competition and continue to win caps. Unless they screw up, or if they screw up in... You know what? The cruise I went on, I just... They weren't keeping score well enough. That was my main issue with the cruise. Anyway, it's not important.
This is where the camera pulls out to reveal that it was Jordan Kalish keeping score on that cruise all the entire time.
It honestly should have been, because they screwed up like a bunch of the scorekeeping for the competitions. Like, that's why I gave it 4 stars. I was like, good food, good activities. Why were you not keeping score well? Like, it wasn't just don't forget the lyrics. It was some of the Sudoku competitions, some of the treasure hunts. Just anyway, that's just me. Being cruises.
Hopefully this is at least a 4-star podcast for you all out there, and this was a great feather in the many caps of one Shannon Gates. Thank you so much for coming on again, Shannon. Cannot wait to talk more Survivor with you both online and on mic in a month or so. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Per Diem to break down this double boot episode, 2 boots, 1 hour of Survivor Edge of Extinction. Considering what we just experienced, I think we're in for a wallop in more ways than one. A special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes, our head writer, Paul Osselson, and Wolfram America for the use of our theme song. Thank you all so much again for listening. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye. We'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
You can say for free.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.